Hello. New podcast. That's weird. So, where was I? Oh, yeah, that's right. Welcome, dear viewer slash listener, to the very first Hit or Miss Doctor Who podcast. I am your slightly croaky host and guide through the adventures of our favourite Time Lord, Michael Wilson. And in this show, we'll be diving into the iconic worlds of Doctor Who with a bit of a twist. After all, there's always a twist. And not just the fact that you can probably hear that I've been suffering from a cold, my traditional winter Christmas cold. So make of that what you will. Apologies if I'm sounding a little bit more Kermit than I usually would, and for any coughs and sputters in the way. But I didn't want to miss this. We've got a Doctor Who podcast to launch, so here we are. Each episode of this podcast will have three main parts: a general chat about the Whoniverse, the legendary hit or miss section, and if you're familiar with hit or miss Star Trek, you know what's coming. And of course, the main event will be a full episode review. Now, in this, our debut episode, we'll be reviewing the most recent new episode to air, the 2024 Christmas special, Joy to the World. Okay, it's a little bit after Christmas, but it is still the most recent episode. Did it spark some Moffat-loving joy, or was it more of a festive turkey? We'll get into all that in a bit. But first, I have to introduce who's here with me. I am joined, as always, by my podcast partner in crime, Mr. DK. Welcome.
Hello.
You ready to talk all things Doctor Who?
Yeah, I'll give it a go. Yeah.
Awesome. Looking forward to this. And yeah, we're also joined by two fantastic Who-related guests who you'll have heard on our various podcasts and on their own in some cases. First of all, please welcome. You'll have heard him on our Silver Screen podcast, talking all things nerdy, and one or two attempts at Trek podcast for the first time. Welcome back, Toby. Welcome, buddy.
Hi, love to be here. Love the intro. I actually thought you messed up for a second and it wasn't playing. So, well done.
No, that was my best impression of David Tennant's first few words in the role of the Doctor. And we're also joined by a third guest today, or a fourth person. Please welcome from the Pasty Sheet podcast, where you'll have heard us talking Doctor Who plenty of times, George White. Welcome, George.
Hello, thank you for having me. It's probably a contractual reason, like the Daleks.
I keep calling it Pasty Sheep Podcast. It's Nerd Bible Podcast on the Pasty Sheep channel, but you know what I mean.
Yes, you get on it. And, you're the spum chum.
Yeah, I fell into doing the weird Sony Marvel character movies. I've got no idea why, but that's what I became known for over there. But yeah, I did do a Doctor Who review or two as well. So yeah.
Yes, and you are both due for the new series as well, aren't you?
We are, and hopefully I might start doing some film reviews with you if you get that off the ground as well. We'll wait and see, I suppose.
So, yes.
Yeah. But obviously I'll always be here and on the Silver Screen podcast anyway. So
Right here. Thank you for having me back. It's always a joy to talk to you guys. It's always a lot of fun, and I'm ready to ruin your episode again.
Always a joy to the world.
Merry Christmas, one and all.
Indeed. So, obviously, we all know our Doctor Who, otherwise we wouldn't be here. This isn't just a case where we were like, jump on a podcast and talk about something you've never seen. So I'm going to jump us into our first section of the podcast. It's a little bit of a kind of getting to know you, a little bit about your history with Doctor Who, and I've decided to title this one, Into the Vortex. Because I have to have graphics and titles if you're on YouTube.
How are we going to get to Heathrow now?
It's just not fun anymore, George.
Braveheart.
My Aunt Vanessa always said, when podcasting's not fun anymore, you just can't do it. Braveheart, etc. So, anyway.
You sounded like Bluey.
Well, it's a niche, but there you go. So, yeah, I'm going to basically go around and ask all of you, what is your kind of introduction to Doctor Who? What was it that first got you, if you can remember, to watch the show and got you hooked on it? And if you have a favourite episode, storyline, serial, or anything like that. And I'm going to come to you first, our guests. And so, Toby, I'm coming to you first. What first of all, what was it that you kind of first interested you in and piqued your interest with Doctor Who?
Well, this story begins, I was sick. No, really, I was sick. I was off from school for like a week or something, and I needed to watch something on Amazon on my little phone while lying in bed. And I found this show. And a week after that, it got removed from Amazon Prime. Great start. So I bought all the series, naturally, which cost a lot of money, but I own them all now. digitally.
Cool.
Great. I still try to get them as a DVD or Blu-ray, but where do you get the money for that? Always the question. It's so fair many enough. Seasons now. Like, when I started, it was 9 seasons, I think, and now we're like 14.
Well, yeah, 15 if you're talking about New Who. I mean, even more. There's another 26 or more.
Well, yeah, now we have 15 coming up. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm talking about New Who here. I didn't fight hard on Amazon Prime randomly. That did not happen.
Fair enough. And can you remember the first episode that you watched? Was it literally just Rose? The first
it was literally of the just New Rose.
Cool. Fair enough.
Just Rose. And
yeah,
it, that's a lot of I don't know the year exactly, but it must have been before season 10, because I watched season 10, not live, but like months after on pay TV on the Sci-Fi channel.
Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. Wow, you guys have some weird places. I bet you're pleased it's on Disney Plus, so at least you know where to look and find all of the new ones now when they go out, you know.
So, well, the last few years, I just bought them on Prime, and they always released the new episodes on midnight. So
yeah, well, fair enough. Cool. And yeah, so the second question then: do you have a favorite episode or storyline or serial and anything like that that stands out from the stuff you've watched?
I mean, it's always going to be a different answer every single day. There's so many great episodes. I would for now say, I mean, it's a popular answer, so maybe I'm a bit basic here, but World Enough in Time, Dr. Faust, great
stuff. Very good, yeah. Yeah, good choice. Cybermen, you know, Shock Deaths, the Master and the other Master, it's all, it's got a little bit of everything, so yeah, I won't spoil much more of that, but good choices. I can't deny that one, so yeah.
I think it's funny because when this episode aired, I think it got spoiled everywhere. but I didn't have that experience because I was not on like WHO's social media at that time. So
yeah, no, I didn't either. It was spoiled in a trailer, but I didn't see that trailer either, so I wasn't spoiled either. You know, but yeah, if you were, you know, clicking on every like trailer and link, apparently the game was given away, but. Yeah, I experienced it fresh as well. So there we go. So cool. Well, we'll move to you next then, George, as our next guest. And you know what I'm going to ask. Can you remember the first thing you saw and what got you hooked on Doctor Who?
I don't know if I've said this before. I'm not sure. Just tell Doctor Who to random people, I think, in the street. I just grab them and say, like, do you remember the empty jar and the Doctor dances? But that's, I think, my first vivid memory of watching it. Go out because for some reason I had to watch the repeats on like Sunday nights. I think because my mom didn't want me hogging the telly. But when I was at my grandparents, like in a dark night, it was pitch black, and I'm watching The Empty Child and The Doctor Dances on BBC Three, and it scared the shit out of me. But I loved it. Cool. And I always used to like go to the Woolworths up there, RIP, and get the old vanilla volume releases every so often. And then I was like, why don't I spend more money and just keep buying it until I die? And that's what I'm doing now.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of felt bad when Toby was like, where'd you get the money for the physical releases? And I was like, well, me and George always manage somehow. I don't know.
Oh, I felt so seen. I was like, I don't have the money for it. I just make myself bankrupt to build a house out of steelbooks. It's an addiction.
Exactly. Yeah, well, fair enough. So, yeah, you're kind of more of a New Who kind of person as well than you kind of came to it in, well, series one, I suppose, Eccleston series, whatever you want to call it. So,
back end of Eccleston, and then Tennant was when I started watching it. I think it was Rise of Cybermen, Age of Steel, where, like, I think I'd watched it I remember watching it when it went out, and then I watched it on the Sunday as well, because I would always watch The Confidential, because, you know, absolute nerd. But for some reason, I feel like it was on like every day that week until the second part was out, like on BBC Three. I feel like I watched it like 4 or 5 times, and for some reason, that's from then on, it was like, I'm watching this go out as soon as it goes out. And the show had me by that point, and I was engrossed and I was committed, and it's not let me go since.
Awesome, because I know that you also, like me, are collecting the kind of classic series Blu-ray releases and stuff as well. Is that your first exposure to the classic series, or did you just have you gone back and watched it since the new stuff came out? Or
So when was it? I think when the Doctor Experience first opened, when it was in London before it permanently found residence in Cardiff. Like, I went there with my mum, and that's when I bought my first. Because I was like, where do I kind of? Because I'd always wanted to own Classic Who, because I'd seen bits and pieces on the old UK TV Gold, like weekends and things like that.
Yeah, same here.
And I thought I'll start at the Five Doctors, because it's kind of like the best and worst of the classic era in like one movie length.
Yeah.
And sort of branched out from there. And like, you know, I found my love for various doctors and, you know, completed them like sort of one by one or based on stories that I sort of found more interesting. And yeah. And then the Blu-ray stuff started coming out, and I wish the standard edition was an option from the start, because I'd have saved slightly more money and more space in my life.
Yeah. Space. But definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I'm committed to these thick original releases now. So
yeah, that's the thing. I'm too far gone. Cause what are they, like, three behind on the standard?
Yeah. Yeah. It's at least three behind. It might be a bit more actually.
Cause I think season two's only just had a listing, isn't it?
Yes, I think that's the next one out. So yeah, it's actually quite a ways behind. But
yeah, that's the thing.
I wouldn't want to wait. I'm too impatient, to be honest.
Oh yeah, I'm so impatient. Had it been a thing from the start of, like, you know, you pay your 50 odd quid for the deluxe one, and then you get the thinner, slightly cheaper £35 one, then I would have done it. But I'm so far gone that I would have to literally sell them all and then start again to even justify it. Really. Yeah. I mean, but if anyone wants to buy anything off me, I'm vintage.
Let's just convince ourselves that these are worth more because they're going to be, you know, first editions or whatever. It's probably not true, but we can always delude
it's something
ourselves.
Something to leave to my kids. That's all I'm thinking.
Nice. Fair enough. Cool.
And, on them, so bury me someday.
Bury me with my box sets. So,
that would be a request. Bury me with the Horns of Nymon.
Do you include Sharda? Never did I.
Oh yeah, that's a whole thing, isn't it?
But no, so I've got to ask what I asked Toby then. Do you have a favorite storyline, particular single episode, or, you know, a serial, anything like that you wanted to show out?
I'm gonna go less obvious, because I always make the same joke about Classic Who, but one of my actual favorites, and I'm not gonna say those big horny beasts, is the Aztecs. I really love that one. That's probably I'd say top Hartnell, one of the top classics for me. I love that one. And obviously your various obvious answers like Androzani, Genesis, things like that. But I really do like Aztecs. For me, that was just one of the first ones I was like, oh, this is the same show. It's just cheaper and older.
New I like Who, the Aztecs as well. I was surprised. Yeah, it's a good story.
Yeah, because that was on, I think, 50th anniversary. That was one of the... When they did one for each Doctor, didn't they? They did a story, and I think Aztecs was the one for that. I think that's the first time I saw it.
Probably is, right? Yeah.
All the way through, and from then on, I was like, "Yep, this one." I'm a Matt Smith guy. He's my Doctor purely because he uprooted the David Tennant, like, you know, mainstream media boy that I was at the time, and he made me believe that anyone can play the Doctor. You can just give him a chance. And since then, I've been a lot more open-minded every time there's a change. 11th Hour, I think, is 10-10. I'll say... I think it's got to be Vincent and the Doctor, modern-wise. That's probably one of the best written pieces of television, I think, in the last 15 years.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, I can't argue with that. The nerd in me wants to kind of point out that it's not a particularly strong episode for, like, monsters or a villain or whatever, but as you know, as is quite obvious, the villain of that story really isn't the invisible alien. It's depression. So you kind of have to accept that script.
You know what you're getting.
Yeah, exactly. But it is, it's a beautiful script, you're absolutely right.
So, and Tony Curran followed me on Twitter once.
No way. He's a great actor. He was in a film that I worked on called Red Road. So if you've never seen that, go watch it. Cool. Over to you then, DK. You know what's coming, so I've got to ask you. I know, like me, you're probably you go back more to the classic Doctor Who than just the modern ones. But can you remember the first thing you saw and what got you hooked on the show?
God, I was there 3,000 years ago.
pulls out his 700-year diary. He's like,
spoilers. I think the first one I actually saw that went out live was Creature from the Pit. And if that wasn't enough to put me off, nothing will.
Yeah, that's a heck of a start. Fair enough. And so Creature from the Pit was your very first one, and you decided to keep watching even after seeing that weird phallic monster?
There was something about Tom Baker trying to blow into it that did it for me.
Tom Baker was a great doctor, it's got to be said. So yeah,
he used to scare me more than the monsters. Truth be told.
Well, isn't it Lala Ward who, whenever she gets asked what was your favourite Doctor Who monster, replies Tom Baker? So, yeah, cool. And obviously I've got to ask you, is there an overall favourite serial or storyline or episode? Anything?
I'm going to have to be one of those awkward bastards and just say, even though I've only seen it in reconstruction, I'm still a Marco Polo guy.
Right. Yes. I can't get into that one.
Good choice.
I'm waiting to see if it gets animated and if I can kind of appreciate it more, because I just find it really boring on the recon. But we'll see.
I just want to slap you about, mate.
Well, what else is new?
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Just super quickly then, just so you guys, I mean, I've said this other places, I think, but if you guys aren't aware of my own history with Doctor Who, it wasn't something we ever really watched in my house. My parents weren't fans of it or anything, but it was always kind of there. And like George, I caught a random episode on Saturday, I think, on UK TV Gold or whatever it was called back then. And it happened to be The Ark in Space, which is one of the best episodes. So I watched that for as long as I could until, like, my parents kind of shuffled me out of the room and switched the TV off. So that was the very first one that I saw. The first one that I made a point of, like, sitting and making an appointment and thinking, I'm going to watch this, was the TV movie in 1996, because I was hugely into, like, Star Trek and all things sci-fi by then. So that was the one where I was like, oh, cool, this show might be coming back. This might be the start of a whole new... It wasn't. Obviously, it didn't pan out that way, but...
I'm so sorry.
Yeah. But I always have a special place in my heart for that TV movie, because I was kind of excited to see... That was almost going to be our generation's version of Rose had it taken off, but obviously it didn't. So, you know. But, yeah, that's my introductions. And as, in terms of my favourites, I'll give you one classic Who and one new Who, and say the classic one, City of Death. And from New Who, I've got to go Human Nature and Family of Blood. So those are my choices. But yeah, I love all of them. I can probably give different answers on a different day, like most of us. But yeah.
Anyway, back to Paul Cornell.
Yeah, Paul Cornell, fantastic writer. Father's Day from Series 1, such a good episode.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. So you've got Nahuvian thoughts flowing, but now it's time for the moment you've been waiting for. It's the legendary hit or miss section.
Yes!
No. So, da-dun-dun-da-dun.
Do-do-do. So, we are all vaguely familiar with this, I think, from Star Trek Hit or Miss. But if you're not, here's where we basically take something. I pick something, anything from the world of Doctor Who, past or present, and we decide debating between ourselves if it hits the mark or misses the target completely. You may be surprised by our verdicts, or maybe not. Doctor Who is known for its hits, and its, well, let's just say it's misses. So, yeah, I've picked completely at random 4 or 5 things. We'll see how many we get through. And as with the Star Trek one, if you happen to know the way we do that, I haven't told any of our guests what these are going to be. They're from anywhere in the Doctor Who universe. But I will say I've tried to stick to the theme of this episode, which would be Christmas specials and Stephen Moffat specials in particular. So you'll see a kind of a theme running through the things of that. Not all of them, but... it's kind of trying to link us into the review a little bit so that it's not just out of absolutely nowhere. So the hit or miss section then. The first thing on for today is an episode. It is a Christmas special, and it is written by Moffat. Hit or miss for A Christmas Carol.
Hit.
And, well, George, we'll come to you first then, since you just decided to...
sorry.
Well, there we go. No, that's fine. Go for it. What? So hit. Anything else you wanted to elaborate on with it?
Stephen Moffat. The man who is cleverer than he thinks he should be. This was, I think, the peak Moffat, like series 5 into beginning of series 6. And it's also the first, you know, main Christmas special without David Tennant. So it's like, does this still work, or is it just a gimmick? And yes, it's lazy and contrived, like a lot of his things can be. He's adapted this, the Bible, a third thing. And I just like Matt Smith. I think this is Matt Smith settled. Like, he's amazing. I mean, Michael Gambon is, you know, fantastic as your Scrooge counterpart. Catherine Jenkins is also there, and she has to sing, but it's okay because it's Murray Gold, and it's quite good.
Yeah,
I just love it. It's, I like the one, because I think Christmas specials fall into two like different things. It's either a good story or it's just, you know, it's Christmas pantomime, and like this is kind of almost like riding between the two. Like, it is like a fantasized version of this version of the story, but it's also at the center of it is just, you know, this little boy that got beaten up by his dad.
I mean,
and the sharks are okay.
I mean, like you said, it's not just that. I mean, there is the element of, from A Christmas Carol, the kind of tragic love story, and but something clever done with that and kind of transposed into a more sci-fi idea, which is, you know, certainly an interesting take. But
I like the nautical themes that all the wind is around, because that was a thing Confidential. I like just how grungy it is. Like, it's not a conventionally nice place to live, probably. Apart from the weird bit where, like, Amy and Rory are doing dress-up role play on their honeymoon flight, which becomes just a kind of
two-second gag at the start.
Moffat just kind of gets obsessed with that. But other than that, like, it's really nice. I like when it's a doctor and not like a guest companion. Like, I think sometimes, you know, it's nice for him to get out and meet other people.
I'm sure we'll get into that when we start talking about Joy to the World, but I'll leave it there for this one and say, yeah, hit overall with you. Toby, how about you? What do you think of A Christmas Carol?
I mean, are there any fans that thinks this is a miss?
Like, well, I got grief when we reviewed it, because we reviewed it on a different podcast, and I think I gave it like a 7 out of 10, and I got such grief off Will Temple.
Okay, but that's not like,
this is brilliant. It's you, how dare you? And I was like, 7 out of 10, still good, to be fair. But,
does anyone really hate this? That's my question.
I don't think so.
Obviously, it's a hit. I mean, yeah, I get it. It's A Christmas Carol again, but like, who hasn't done A Christmas Carol?
Yeah,
sure, a number one. Who cares?
Yeah. You're never going to beat the Muppets.
It's so overdone. It doesn't even matter.
Yeah, but at least Moffat did something new with it by, you know, bringing in the sci-fi tropes and making it a bit, you know, a bit different in that regard. And I appreciated what was done with it. I think, and I appreciate it more now than I did the first couple of times I watched it, and more so for the little moments and things, sort of the great dialogue and the way the Doctor is very doctory, for want of a better word, and kind of, you know, does the thing of saving saving a soul ultimately at the end of the day. And yeah, I really like a lot of what's in there. Part of the reason I put it in here is obviously because it's Moffat, and also because he was on the official Doctor Who podcast talking about like his past specials just before Joy to the World, and he seemed a little bit almost detrimental towards this, because the hosts of the podcast were very like full of praise for his dialogue, and like, oh, I love the line where he says like, oh, I've never met anybody that's not important, and all these great things. And Moffat was like, ah, it's not profound, that's just the Doctor being a smart ass. Don't take your profound wisdom from Doctor Who showrunners. And I'm like, well, you're right, good stuff, dude. You know, he shouldn't be ashamed of it. You should acknowledge it, and it means a lot to a lot of people, you know. So anyway, it's a hit from me, I will say that now. And DK, over to you.
it's a hit. I can't really say anything that hasn't already been said. It's a good story. It's a nice little twist on the Dickens classic involving some, you know, sci-fi tropes and stuff. So yeah, pleasant, very pleasant.
Yeah. And I think the performances, as you said, help. I mean, the late great Michael Gambon obviously is an amazing actor, so having him as your main focus there doesn't hurt. But then, I mean, kudos to, I can't remember the chap's name, I think it's Lawrence something, who plays the younger Kazran, who's also
Lawrence
really
Belcher,
good.
I think.
Belcher, there we go. Thank you. I knew one of you would know. So he's also great. And then obviously Matt Smith, as you said, who had the unenviable job of like, well, we've only ever done Christmas specials with Tennant, basically. So good luck. See if it works without. And as you said, just hit the ground running and was just amazing. I like Catherine Jenkins, and she doesn't have a lot to do except kind of be pretty and tragic and sing a great operatic song, but you know, like, why not?
Like, so, most of her life.
So yeah, I'm gonna say, well, that's four hits for A Christmas Carol, put it that way. So to answer Toby's question, it turns out, yeah, quite beloved of an episode.
Shocking. I think it's my favourite Matt Smith special. Yeah. Probably top three out of all of them.
Yeah, it probably is, although I do like Time of the Doctor. It has moments that are iffy, but I do love the rest.
Oh, no, don't bring up Time of the Doctor, please.
I won't, that's not on the list. We'll talk about that another time. So the second thing on the list is from a Stephen Moffat Christmas special. It's a character. It's
Stephen Moffat.
Very random. So hit or miss for the character of Shona McCulloch. And if you need reminding who she is, I'll be happy to remind you. She was from last Christmas, and she should have been a companion, goddammit.
Yes.
Played by Faye Marseille. And because we went to you first last time, George, I'll come to you, Toby, now. Hit or miss for this character. And do you remember her, first of all?
I mean... Yeah, kind of. I say this. From all the almost companions, I think she's probably lower on my list.
Wow, really?
Sorry for that. Yeah, I think we had a lot better. I mean, she's fine. She's good. She's a hit. Not a miss. Okay. It's not like she's ruining the story thing.
No.
It's a soft hit. No, no. Let's say soft hit. It's a soft hit.
I'm surprised because I think she made quite an impact on a lot of people, myself included, in the episode. And I mean, she is kind of... She's almost the linchpin of it, and she kind of gets the kind of sum up and the wrap up at the end when they're all being awakened from their dreams, and you see that she's got her own thing going on. And for me, you can kind of tell that this was going to be a replacement companion when Clara was potentially going to leave and then didn't. And I just think it's such a missed opportunity, not least because Faye Marseille is a great actress as well, and it would have been cool to have her on board for a year or two. But, that's my thoughts anyway.
I mean, ramble. Clara left like 5 times in this story alone. But
well, right. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, the less said
what
about
was that.
That
about? The why?
It was just because they were constantly all leaving. And towards the end of the run, it was always like Jenna was leaving, and then Moffat was going to leave, and then stay on another year, and then God knows they were all kind of all over the place. So there's an awful lot of false. Oh no, what's gonna? Oh, never mind, we're fine, kind of thing. So,
exactly. They just kept adding on scenes. We're like, oh no, he's back. Oh no, she's back as well.
Yeah. Oh no, don't worry, they're fine.
Keep tagging stuff on.
I mean, the whole of season 10 shouldn't exist. It was just Moffat staying on because there was nobody to take over at the time, and he was like, oh, "I'll do one more year, then. All right, whatever." So,
yeah. And anyway, good choice. Season 10 is incredible.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
Good choice.
And yeah, so DK, I'm going to come to you next, just to mix it up a little bit. What do you think of Shona? Can you remember her?
I can remember her. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It would have been great to see her as a companion. I like her as an actress. It's a shame that she never became a companion, but we got her in Andor, so I'm fine with that.
Yes. I was thinking Game of Thrones, but I completely forgot she was in Andor as well, and very good in that as well. So, yeah. Awesome. I'm not just biased because she's from around my neck of the woods, by the way. She is a great actress.
But, she's holding you at gunpoint and asking you these questions.
Nah. So, George, what about you? Shona, thoughts?
Yeah, of... Like you say, of the would have been, could have been, should have been companions, I'd say she's probably the best. I'd say up there with, what's her name from God Complex? Geeta.
Oh, I can't remember, but yeah, she's definitely would, should have been a companion, yeah.
Love her.
But yeah, I think it's Rita, actually, yeah.
Rita, Geeta, I don't know. That might, Jesus. I'm terrible at everything. I don't even watch this show. yeah, like, I think it's just a shame that it had to keep flipping around of, oh, Jenna's leaving at the end of Series 8. No, she's leaving in the Christmas special. Oh, she's doing one more year. We're going to keep changing it because we're doing what she wants. It's like,
yeah.
It would have been nice to sort of see how she'd have developed because she is probably the most developed out of the base under siege characters in this, you know,
ooh.
Like definitely not a ripoff of Alien / The Thing. but yeah, it's just a shame that does Moffat have a thing with one-time companions where he doesn't give them enough time and could that come up again later sort of thing?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, I think he does a much better job in some other circumstances, including this one, than perhaps in his most recent effort. But
yes.
Again, we'll get into that later. So.
I'd say, yeah, I'd agree with Toby. It's probably a soft hit because I wanted to see more.
Yeah, I just double-checked, by the way, the character was called Rita from the God Complex, played by Amara Karan. So she doesn't.
Yeah, she was great. Apparently. With respect, Amy, you're fired. She cool. was amazing.
And yeah, well, obviously, I've kind of given you my thoughts on Shona. I think she was a huge hit, and I was kind of gutted when she didn't stay beyond that Christmas special, and I thought it was, she got a really cool storyline, and they did, you can kind of see that the setup was there, so it was a little bit of a letdown when it was like, and now she's just going to cross the things off her list and go on with her life, and that's that. I was like, oh, well, never mind then, I guess. But as DK said, we got her in Andor and Game of Thrones and other places, the actress, so take the good with the bad. So I think that's four hits again.
Doing good.
Exactly. Yeah, doing good things. Four hits again, though. That's wild. Are we all just really positive Doctor Who fans, which is rare, by the way, in this day and age? Or is there?
Ask me again in 20 minutes.
Or are we just, are we just picking things that we know are good? The next thing on the list, then, is not particularly Christmas related. It's just, I had it in my head, and I don't know why. Maybe because it's a recent thing. I don't know. It's a character. Hit or miss for the character of the Toy Maker. And I'm going to mix it up again and come to you first on this one, DK. What do you make of the Toy Maker, hit or miss?
I have always loved the Toy Maker. I love Michael Goff's interpretation. I love, oh God, I forgot his name. Apologies, the guy that played Cotton in Pirates of the Caribbean in the Big Finish ones.
David Bailey.
Yes, and I love Neil Patrick Harris. I think he's a brilliant character. He's obviously very underused. I think the Neil Patrick one maybe took it a bit too far, a little less mysterious, but there were still some good scenes in it. And as a character, yeah. I even like the old Gary Russell Divided Loyalties novel, and that'll see me ostracized from many a group of fandom. But yeah, I love the character, so it's a definite hit for me.
Cool. I've not read that novel, but I was going to actually ask, which now I don't have to, if anybody had heard David Bailey's version in The Nightmare Fair, the unproduced Sixth Doctor story that they did for Big Finish. And he's really good. As you say, it's kind of...
Yeah, he was also good in the Companion Chronicles against Charlie Pollard.
Yeah, Solitaire or something, wasn't it called?
Yeah.
Also good. Yeah, very good. I mean, obviously... Canonicity is debatable when it comes to Big Finish, so but I didn't want to at least mention David Bailey, but yeah, we're talking mainly, I think, about Michael Goff and
the I podcast. Do consider Big Finish for the most part canon, but one of my Fair stories enough. Is in Big Finish, so that's why I'm just a bitch like that.
Fair enough. So you're going to say hit for the Celestial Toymaker character then, in that case?
Definitely, yes.
Awesome. George, go on, hit or miss, what do you think?
Oh, I think it's hard because I agree with what DK said that I think NPH took it a bit too far to the extreme because I don't think it was a character we were expecting to come back at any point. I mean, it's nice that Russell sort of went, well, for the anniversary, I'll bring back an old character and sort of introduce this weird breakdown of the barriers or whatever happens at the end of Wild Blue Yonder in terms of, you know, myths and legends kind of thing, which kind of played into season one as successfully or unsuccessfully. I think the Michael Goh version, I think, is my favourite out of the two at the minute. We'll have to see. Maybe like he'll come back in a later storyline in RTD2 or a shooty episode. Because I know there's a set photo that alludes to another member of the Pantheon or something. So maybe, you know...
Oh, there's a few. Definitely.
Yeah, kind of recurring thing. And maybe the end of Shooty Gatwa Zira. We'll see Neil Patrick Harris again, maybe. But yeah, I want to see more. So I'd say hit purely off of Michael Goh.
Yeah. Did you, by the way, get the reanimated Celestial Toymaker Blu-ray when
yes,
it came out?
I did, and I have rewatched it, and I'm like, yeah, this is great, because like you say, like DK was saying, like he's more mysterious and, you know, aloof of a character, and then it's just like, oh, no, he's a big god like the Joker, but, you know, he likes puppets, and he's a psycho.
Yeah. I was really unsure about that when the trailer came out, but it's shocking how well it works for the story, because the story is so kind of trippy and weird, and as you said, it's kind of nice that Michael Goff's performance, even though, you know, you're animating to an existing audio, but a lot of his performance was lost, and it kind of feels like it's kind of almost been returned a little bit with that animation. Yeah. And yeah, there's some really good stuff in there. I think it works really well. But I actually genuinely liked Neil Patrick Harris's version. I don't think he went overboard. I think it was a perfect kind of you know, he was intimidating when he needed to be. He was over the top when it was best to be for the character, because he had to be. He's kind of like a supernatural force, is the way that they were playing it. So you've got to go big, I suppose, with that one. And I just love it. I loved all of the Spice Girls dancing and craziness and everything. So, yeah, I was on board for that. And I loved, obviously, like I said, Michael Goff, David Bailey as well. So it's a big hit for me.
Well, that's all right, then.
Well, that's all right. Toby, are you going to make it 4 out of 4 for the toy maker and have no misses at all on this section?
I'm afraid I do. We have hits again.
Well, there you go.
No, he's so fun in both appearances. I'm with you, Mike. I don't mind the Neil Patrick Harris one. I don't think it's too much or any problem. It's a little bit different, sure, but I mean, it's how many years after the original?
Well, exactly. Yeah,
we can do a little variety. That's okay. And I think he's a kind of character that works when he very rarely appears. So until 2050, I assume. 2050. No, I don't think he would work if he was reoccurring like a master sort of thing. He's kind of like a nice gimmick for occasion. I mean, I don't know about this whole Pantheon thing. Not the biggest fan, but that's not that. It's not the new Patrick Harris fault that they're doing this weird thing. No, I like the toy maker. Not the Pantheon, but I like the toy maker. He's a hit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I'm very not sold on this idea of the Pantheon, but then again, I do kind of like when it links some things together that we knew about previously, and it's kind of, all right, if you're going to tell me that, you know, the Trickster and the Mara and whatnot were these uber-powerful beings, then at least we've got an explanation for that, and my nerd brain can be like, all right, whatever. I'll accept that, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it really was just an excuse to get some tech back, really, wasn't it? Yeah.
For me, the Pantheon feels just like an excuse to be semi-serialized, because that's kind of like it's kind of the thing now to be serialized, and obviously Doctor Who can't go there completely. I mean, it can, it tried. It didn't work for other reasons than being serialized. That wasn't the issue. If that's COVID's fault, mostly. But
yeah,
I think it's time to get a little bit into that direction, you know, more. Also in like a kind of network TV kind of style where you have just recurring things coming up. Mm. I mean, Doctor Who did the mystery box, but like that doesn't count. Slapping Bad Wolf in the background every 3 episodes. Well,
I mean, the thing is though that if you're gonna do a mystery box, you can't have it be disappointing and then do what you did at the end of season 1, which is to go, "Ha! You thought it was important because I said it was." Well, yeah, I trusted you, dude. You're the showrunner, you know.
I agree. So, but I also think they just don't really count for me as serialized, because it's such a lazy attempt. Like, don't call it. But this feels a little bit more like a genuine attempt to be semi-serialized, especially because we now have the Pantheon in season 2 and whatever the Frizz's Flood is up to.
Who knows? Let's just hope it's not disappointing.
Anyway. Oh, it will be.
Probably.
You're going to love it for being very disappointing.
Anyway, enough of that negativity. We're all positive. That was 4 hits again for the Toymaker. So I have a 4th and final thing. We're kind of going back to the Christmas specials almost, and I'm just curious to know thoughts about this. Or you may not even be able to necessarily contribute to this one, but I couldn't resist. You'll have to forgive the incredibly tiny image that I've got on screen here. But hit or miss for the Daleks Master Plan. And a very Merry Christmas to all of you at home.
Merry Christmas to all of you at home.
So, George, go on. You can go first again. Daleks Master Plan, hit or miss.
Well, when I first watched this in December of 1964, or whenever it was.
Sure you did, yeah.
I was as surprised as the cast and crew, because it's weird. Like, the fourth wall break thing in Doctor Who is so rare, and it annoys a lot of people for some reason. Like, just when it happens in general, not just this one. But it's like, it's just, you know, it's a kind old man in the 60s wishing kids a Merry Christmas because they're all, for some reason, drinking champagne in the TARDIS. So I can't hate against it. I think it's fun. I'd like to have seen more of it. Like Tom Baker going, "And a happy Easter, carry all over your anus."
Yes. But no, I mean, regardless of the Feast of Stephen, the episode we're talking about, which basically, let's be honest, stops the plot of the Daleks Master Plan, because it happens that the Christmas Day fell on a Saturday and they were like, well, we can't do, you know, the intense Dalek chase, you know, multi-serial deaths everywhere thing on Christmas Day. So effectively they just do a completely different story out of nowhere for 25 minutes. But regardless of that, how do you feel about the Daleks Master Plan, the other 11/12 parts?
I don't know. I've not seen them.
You've not seen them at all?
No.
Really?
I'm gone.
Oh, okay.
Dead in the past. I don't know. I've not. It's not one I've been able to seek out audio things of or whatever. So it's one of those ones that's c'est la vie.
I highly recommend doing so. There's like three surviving
episodes. It's like the Avengers, isn't it? Of bad guys. Like they're getting bad.
It's surprisingly ambitious for the 60s, and I think does some good things in the footage that we have got. It's just that, like you said, it's a 12-part story plus an extra part if you include Mission to the Unknown. And I'm sure there's only two or three episodes that exist, but when you see those episodes, it's incredible that they've got like decent production values and a bunch of completely alien-looking aliens for the first time and Daleks everywhere doing cool things, and it's an epic plot. And I do recommend, if you get a chance, to check it out too. So I really wish it would be animated or something so that more people could see it, but or ideally found, which is never going to happen. But yeah, but it's such.
Did you see the University remake of Mission to the Unknown?
I did, of Mission to the Unknown. They did a fantastic job. I mean, that's, if you were going to redo like animation or whatever and try to bring the story to life, I've already said you could save yourself time by just including that recon of Mission to the Unknown, which has been done, and just don't animate the Feast of Steven because it's got nothing to do with the storyline anyway.
But, no, just animate that clip and just play it on a loop for 25 minutes.
I mean, Feast of Steven is ridiculous, let's be honest. It's, if you've actually heard that, or because again, it doesn't exist, but I've kind of listened to the audio and seen the telesnaps, and it's just stupid.
It's Panto.
Just
them, it's Christmas Panto,
it's,
really.
It's Panto.
Oh, yeah, no, it isn't.
Oh, yes, it is. But yeah, it's a shame that you haven't seen it. But okay, if you haven't, you haven't. You can't really give an opinion either way. So, how about you, Toby? Have you seen anything of the Daleks Master Plan?
I did. I don't remember.
Okay.
I mean, to be honest, these reconstructions sometimes just make me fall asleep.
Yeah, it's
what are we doing?
I'll be honest. I just can't really focus on the reconstructions because of the nature of the way that the. I don't know, telesnaps and stuff, it doesn't work for me, but I did get the audio, the off-air soundtrack with narration, with linking narration of the Daleks Master Plan, and kind of appreciated it a lot more that way, because I can kind of just close my eyes and picture the images, and you've got Peter Purvis telling you about what, you know, what you're going on that you're supposed to see and you can't, and whatever, so I think I appreciated it a lot more audio only than I did trying to watch the telesnaps. And I said the three surviving episodes are on the Lost in Time DVD that I've got, and I've watched those a few times, because there's some good stuff in there, so... And yeah, it's a hit for me. I really want to see it, like I said, either recovered or animated or something done with it, because I think it's such a good story. And it's got a couple of really big, shocking, like companion deaths and moments in it as well. But again, it's all been lost to time. So DK, you're my kind of last hope then. If we've got two not applicables and one hit from me, I know you must have seen the Daleks Master Plan in some form, right?
Of course, it's Hartnell. Jesus. Yes, it's a hit. I love it. I love Feast of Steven because, as I say, see, it's just knockabout panto fun. Daleks Master Plan. It has an element of the old Crisis Infinite Earths. It has an element of, you know, Carry On Emmanuel. It's pretty much, yeah, we could, let's try and stretch this out as much as humanly possible. And it's not all necessary, as exemplified by the Feast of Steven, but it's still a decent adventure, and I love Feast of Steven.
I love it. I think it's because I'm a fan of like epic sci-fi and everything, and kind of anytime you do epic sci-fi with callbacks, and I mean, it's a 12-part serial that involves the Daleks, the return of the meddling monk. You know, you've got multiple, like I said, companions coming and going in the storyline. You've got this Mavic Chen bad guy who's really quite an effective bad guy all the way throughout, even though the Daleks should really be the main bad guy, but they're not because there's always someone worse and whatnot.
Yeah.
And,
the only thing that's ever put me off is seeing one of Ian Levine's reconstructions.
I've never watched any of his crap, to be honest.
Oh, God, I needed to bleach my eyes after that shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of his stuff, to be honest, but yeah.
No.
Like
no.
I said, I appreciated it when I got the audio soundtrack and listened to it with the narration, but I really do want to... I just want to see it animated or something, just something done with it. But like I said, I know it is so epic and there's so much you've got to do that it's highly unlikely we ever will, but it's just, I don't know. It's the great lost classic of Doctor Who for me. So yeah, two hits. I think we're going to say that's fair enough. And yes, a Merry Christmas to all of you at home, as the Doctor would say.
Chesterton, Chesterton World of Adventures.
Chesterton was gone by then, man. It was Peter Purvis and Gene Marsh.
You'll be cinders flying around in Spain.
What is it? Is this helmet for a cow?
Very nice, very good. Yes. Peter Purvis telling us all tales about how they were drinking Asti Spumante, and it's the only thing he remembers of that particular recording.
He was that pissed on Asti Spumante.
Yeah, the fourth wall break wasn't supposed to happen. They were all just pissed. Yeah. But anyway,
it's actually the rap party. Don't tell the director. I shat
anyway, the that's party. Enough of that. That will conclude the hit or miss section then with, you know, overall, I would say a positive. There's nothing negative, just two kind of we haven't seen it, and everything else was positive. So that will bring us careening into today's full review, which, as I've said, is going to be the episode Joy to the World. Did it have you celebrating the holiday spirit, or was it more bar humbug than festive cheer? We're going to dive in and find out.
That meant that you could just tune in and see any event in history.
Yes, that's exactly what this is.
No, Dr. York, kidding.
And we're going to start, as we always do, if you've listened to any of our reviews on Hit or Miss Trek or Silver Screen, by activating our time-space visualizer and going into the behind the scenes of the episode. And as is always the case, my little Christmas elf DK is here to regale us with that. So over to you, DK. You have the behind the scenes. No.
Right. Wrong message. Yes. Joy to the World is the 2024 Christmas special. It was broadcast on the 25th of December, 2024. As well as being the ninth Christmas special written by Stephen Moffat, is the first not written by the current showrunner, since RTD was too busy writing Series 15 / Season 2 to write the Christmas special as well. It is Judy Gatwood's second Christmas special as the Doctor, and features Nicola Coughlan and Steph DeWaley as the Doctor's companions for the story, Joy Almondo and Anita Benn. While shown with Joy and Anita as his companions, the story continues on from the Series 4 Wet Blanket, Empire of Death, and sees the Doctor initially struggling to be alone during Christmas after parting ways with Ruby Sunday, who makes a brief appearance near the end of the story. Notably, the end of Joy to the World, where the Doctor witnesses Joy becoming the star that guides the three wise men to Bethlehem, confirms that biblical events exist in Doctor Who in tandem with the science fiction nature of the series. The Time Hotel features a clothes store called Mr. Ben's, Any Era Clothes, a reference to the character of Mr. Ben, who would go on adventures via a magic door in a costume shop. In the end credits, Ben is also revealed to be Anita's last name. The name of the bar in the Time Hotel is The Timeless, a reference to their book, The Time Traveller's Wife. The 12th Doctor also owns a copy of this book and stores it on the TARDIS bookshelves. That was Dark Water, I believe. And in the end credits, the name of the passenger on the Orient Express is revealed. Sylvia Trench is also the name of the very first James Bond girl from the 62 movie Doctor No. Stephen Moffat claims this is intended to be the same person. And yeah, I didn't know that, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, a little bit of a painting of myth I found just in looking for things about the episode. So yeah, I mean, anything there surprise anybody or anything there that you didn't already know? I know that you're probably all, with the exception of me and DK, are way too young to have gotten the thrill of seeing Mr. Ben's clothing and being like, oh, Mr. Ben, yeah.
I did get such a buzz from that.
Yep, same. Yeah. I'm just old enough to remember Mr. Ben, but when that happened, I was like, oh, I love that Easter egg. And yeah, I did spot the kind of the Hobbit hole door of the Time Hotel as well. Yes. And everything like that. Yeah. I was like, oh, so many cool Easter egg things that can potentially be happening here. But yeah, anyway.
So does that mean Jesus and James Bond are all in the same universe as Doctor Who?
I suppose so, technically, yeah. I guess so.
So is the Bible a prequel?
Robin Hood exists, so why not?
That is not Robin Hood.
Yeah, I haven't given it that much thought, to be perfectly honest. It's Doctor Who. I don't think we really need to examine it to that level.
But Stephen Moffat has to adapt like the big characters. So Sherlock Holmes, Dracula, he's ripped off Charles Dickens. What is next but the Bible?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll get into that, but yeah. I don't really have any kind of structure to my notes for this one because I knew what I was coming with and what the things I wanted to talk about. But I have got the sections written down that we normally do, which is to start with kind of writing and plot, then go into like acting, directing, VFX if necessary, music, and then I've got obviously audience response to this, which I've got from various social medias. So starting with the writing and the plot then, there's a few things to hit on, and I'm not going to go in any kind of order, because why hamper ourselves? Because you've brought something up already, George, which I figure it is worth talking about. So how do we all feel about the tying in of the kind of biblical events? And I'll be honest, it was kind of spoiled for me because somebody, as soon as it was revealed in the clip that there was a star seed and a star was going to be born, somebody on the internet was like, well, I bet she becomes the Star of Bethlehem, and sure enough, it happened. So I was kind of, oh. Bit obvious, but I liked it personally. I didn't like bat an eyelid at it. I wasn't offended or anything, and I just thought it was a cool, nice little tie-in, especially on Christmas Day. But how did you all feel about that?
I mean, thought it was cute.
Okay. Yeah.
I get if people don't care about this and go like, oh, it doesn't do it for me. That's fair. I think a lot of people need to log off the internet. Because some people got really offended at this. And I thought it was very funny how people got offended. Like, how dare you? Christianity is so bad. Dare you endorse it? I'm like, please log off. Enjoy time with your family. Log off. It's a Christmas special. Do you know where Christmas is coming from?
Bizarre. Yeah, I think there's a lot of that in there. And again, it comes up in another plot line that I'll talk about when we get to it, because that's also a proven controversial in a way that it really shouldn't have. But again, focusing more on the kind of religious aspect for now. What did you think about it, George, the big Star of Bethlehem reveal at the end?
I mean, because I think there was a theory going around before the episode came out that with the hotel, it's like, oh, like the doctor's, it's going to loop back around to the, oh, I should know I was there. I got the last room bollocks, and it was going to be the inn. So I'm glad
They did make that joke, though, which I kind of appreciated, which was like, you know, you can go to any hotel in history using the Time Hotel, so no wonder there was no room at the inn, because, of course, everybody would go back to then, wouldn't they? It's like you can go to whatever time you want, including the birth of Christ, so everybody would be piling in there.
Yeah, it's very true. I'm just glad it didn't end with like the, and we have to stand here, like with Rosa Parks, we have to stand here and watch Jesus be born, because that would have been, I think, too much. I think the star thing is just enough. And I like that it's the note that it ends on, because it's kind of like you've just had the scene previously with her mother. So this is more of a, this is more of a positive kind of like a, you know, she brought joy to the world. I love the title.
And because, I mean, the subtext is basically that the star brings hope, which is the thing I loved about it. Was like, as much as I didn't love that, that's where that character went, and like that was her fate, I appreciated what Moffat was saying about the fact that, you know, it's a dark time, but then when anybody looks up and sees the star, they kind of they're given hope. And so I think that was why you had those characters, the old couple included, in the middle of the war, because they have no purpose except at the very end to go like, oh, well, I was downhearted and thought it was the end of the world, but now I've got hope because I saw a star. And it's kind of like that's how it fed into the biblical aspect, was very much like, and now the star is shining. We have hope. These people are going to find, you know, Christ, and you know, we'll focus on the good aspects of religion and the hope it brings people as opposed to anything else. Because again, it's Christmas Day, so why wouldn't you? And you don't want to overthink it too much anyway. But so I kind of appreciate it on that level. What about you, DK? What did you think of all that?
I didn't mind it. I do find it intriguing that, you know, the concept that it's an arms manufacturer being responsible for that. Although, you know, looking westward, it's not really surprising at this point. It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. It didn't make me groan audibly. It's a Christmas special. I can forgive its little bit of schmaltziness.
Yeah, that's fair enough. And I will say I was...
That text in the end was very cheesy. Like, just, in case you didn't notice, Bethlehem 0001.
I loved it. I'm all for it. I was already just in tears at that point anyway, so I was like, yay.
No, I don't mind it, but I was like, okay, this is very on top. it's laying it out very thick.
There's already some really geeky people online that were like, that's not accurate. It wouldn't be 0001. I'm like, obviously, but, you know, shorthand.
Who cares?
Like, you know, we have to understand what he's referring to. And if it was like, this is 34 BC or whatever it ultimately winds up being, it's not as effective and clean as just, look, this is point one, Bethlehem. We know what we're referring to. It's a little Christmas card, you know. So,
I study history. Yeah. Take it from me. Nobody cares.
Yeah, exactly. Nobody cares. Yeah. Well, yeah. So, that's that. And kind of, I'm not going to deal with all these idiots that were like, oh, the show got woke by mentioning Christianity. And like, just decide which side you're on, idiots.
It got woke.
Yeah.
How bizarre. Christianity is now woke.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, is it or isn't it? Like I said, I could not understand these arguments. I was baffled by, you know, half of the people going like, well, Christianity is the only path to follow and everything. And then the other ones going, oh, you brought in religion, you're woke. Okay, over it. Jesus.
What isn't woke at this point?
Well, yeah, exactly. They're always going to look for stuff. But speaking of kind of controversial storylines that had to do with the plot, which I have to say I didn't bat an eyelid about or give a shit one way or the other, obviously quite integral to the character of Joy is the kind of real world implications of the kind of COVID lockdown and not being able to see her mother, and a particularly very pointed reference to the people in power in government at the time that were, you know, champagne fridges and having parties while we were not supposed to be doing that, and rules were broken. And like I said, I've seen that already be divisive from people that didn't like that. And I can't say I was bothered. I was a little bit, it took me out of the story because I don't really love Doctor Who bringing in real world events, because I always feel like it breaks the immersion a little bit. But at the same time, it didn't bother me terribly. You know, it was something we all went through. So why not tie it into that character and into the kind of cheesy ending that you were going to give her? You know, you've got to do it somehow. So why not? What did you guys think of that? Just open forum. How do you feel about the handling of that by Moffat?
I really liked it. Oh, sorry. No, you go first.
Toby. You're right.
Okay. I really liked it. When that came up, I really gasped and said, oh, no. Like, I was really into it. And I thought it was very emotional. I really liked it. And I get it when people say don't bring too specific stuff into, because it can definitely date stuff, you know, where you have like all these TV shows that suddenly made COVID real in universe. It's like, okay, that's not going to read that well in 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, I get that, but I really like the way it is done here. And, you know, it's for one episode. I think that's a little bit more of a case where it's like, okay, we're doing it for one episode. We bring that a little bit in. Sure, why not? It's not like a TV show that's doing like three seasons of COVID. It's like, okay, we get it.
Yeah. I know what you mean, but yeah, it's, I will say, if I can be critical for a second as well, I think it's necessary, because if you don't do that, then Joy has no character at all anyway, because she's so flimsily written that there's nothing about her. So at least having that kind of real world thing to latch onto, I think gives you the audience a bit more of a, you know, a character there. But anyway.
What I do understand is that I saw a lot of people outside of the UK. I mean, I knew about this. I'm not in the UK, but I knew about this. But a lot of people probably don't, because why would they?
Yeah.
So they got a little confused by it. And, you know, okay, fair enough. That's okay. But it's a UK show, so you have to expect that at some point. Like,
yeah, I think it's one of those things that it would have made the news, and it was ultimately, I mean, whether you like it or not, it was kind of the downfall of the political party in charge. Yeah. And the reason why they currently aren't. So if you keep up with politics and news and stuff like that, I think you would know about it and why, you know, what had happened and why people were rightfully angry, I think, you know. So I think there's enough of that there. And I'm kind of with Stephen Moffat when he was queried on it. And I think the only thing I've heard him say is, you don't always bring up stuff like that in real life, but some people deserve a good kicking after what they did. And, you know, we all went through this and they didn't, and they deserve it. And it's kind of hard to disagree with them, really. So, yeah.
What I found really funny was some people on, I told you this, Mike, people online tried to argue that this was, that Moffat was saying COVID restrictions bad and be like whole anti-vax and anti-COVID about this thing. And then people, which I somewhat can get if you don't know the context, people explain the context to them and then they say, no, I don't think this is it.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, great talking to you. This was so funny to me. No, I don't think this is it. Okay. Then don't.
Even when you're being shown, like, the writer talking about this was clearly his intention and what he's talking about, and they're like, nah, it's not whatever. Anyway, DK, sorry, I keep trying to go back to you. What were you going to say?
I'm finished. I'm finished.
It's, the storyline, I mean, some could accuse it of being, like, overly political. I do think it's nice to see real-world events. I don't think they ever refer to it as COVID, but we know what they're talking about. I think it's
more the pointed reference to the fact that, like Joy says, I couldn't see my mum because of the restrictions and, you know, those people with all their daft champagne fridges and their parties and stuff, which is a very, very specific pointed reference to, certain people without naming them, you know. So.
They're never explicitly named, though. Everybody knows full well who they are. I mean, I was in the same position as Joy. I lost my aunt because of that, and we couldn't see her. And, to find out that, it's absolutely infuriating. It's absolutely just make you want to kick a door down. But, you know, it is what it is. And I do like that they touched upon real-world events without getting into it. I think he skirted a line and he did it well. I think people moaning about it are just kind of looking for things to moan about at this point.
Of course, yeah. You're always going to get that on
you. Gave it a bit of realism, didn't it? It gave, Joy some character and some, I can relate to that because, you know, a lot of us went through stuff like that, you know, nearly 5 years ago. So it's still fresh, but it has been a while. And it's not that they've gotten away with it, but in terms of they've never had to face anyone saying, no, you were out of line.
Yeah.
And it's on a mainstream TV show where a lot of people are watching. It was everything it needed to be. It was just enough to give us some context of why she is the way she is in terms of her outlook on life and her character, which, you know, was criminally underwritten anyway. And it made the ending more poignant because then it sort of linked back to that. And it was just a nice sort of, there is a more joyous note to sort of end on kind of thing in terms of what happened to them. But hold them accountable.
Moving on from that, then I have to say just a couple of things that I have about the writing in the plot, because I only have a couple of more notes. First of all, I know this is going to be an unpopular opinion because I've already said this about other episodes and been criticized for it, but my word, I really friggin' hate how much Moffat relies on his clever, smart, alecky, clever, the now bootstrap paradox bullshit so much. I was like, how did you know the code? I heard you tell me it when you came in here. Don't worry about it. It's like, shut up, Moffat. You couldn't have just done anything else. Like, he spent a year, you know, working it out mathematically or anything. It's just like, I absolutely hate it. It's just, I'm so smart. Time travel. Oh.
Yeah, so clever. I'm so very clever with all my scripts. We'll give Dracula an iPad.
So, yeah, I mean, I hated it throughout the Pandorica opens and the Big Bang when it was like, I've got it because I had it when I was going to be there. And then now I was, my future self told me, but how did he know? It doesn't matter. It's all a bootstrap paradox. And just let it go for 1 minute, Moffat. Yeah. You don't have to be so, Anyway.
It's when he goes, technically the code came from nowhere. So he's just going to get to that same point in time as I am. And it's like, I mean, that felt very sort of like I have to handhold the audience through it because he could have just, lost that line and it would have, been just as meaningless anyway. So,
yeah. And it's just so stupid when, the explanation given is, so technically, yes, the code came from nowhere, but so did the universe and nobody complains about that. What? That's just, it's just smart alecky BS, really, isn't it?
But that's why we love him, the smart alecky BS.
I like some of it. I like some of the stuff he does really well. And I love his kind of character interactions and his emotional stuff. But his smart alecky bullshit, I'm just not a fan of. And I wish he would give it a rest.
Moffat is ironically written the better scripts in RTD too. So,
well, I mean, I'll get to it, but I think I loved his script for Boom, and I think this was a massive letdown after that. But again,
not as good as Boom, but I think for me, I enjoyed this one more. I think I said to you, Mike, I enjoyed this one more than Church on Ruby Road, despite the fact that Church actually meant something because it was the introduction point. But more
I didn't prefer this. I much preferred Church on Ruby Road to this. I've got to be honest with you. So
I've got to say, I much preferred this.
Well, there we go. We'll get to that towards the end then when we give our conclusion.
Everyone against Mike.
Wouldn't be the first time, but yeah. In terms of
the not the last time.
in terms of the overall writing, and it's kind of going to bleed into the acting side of things, I have to say that one of my other criticisms is that I cared about literally every other character more than Joy.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Because yeah. It's like, I loved Joel Fry's character. I forgot his name, Trev, is it? And I was kind of sad when he got killed immediately. I was like, oh, he was well acted and he got the kind of, he got some of the Moffat smart alecky dialogue, but I don't mind that. You know, when it's
he would have been a great back and companion. Forth.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of was gutted that he left, and I liked the Silurian manager Melnack. He was cool. Again, he got killed immediately off. Obviously, like the rest of the world, I much preferred Anita to Joy, and just think like, yes, I know that it was a last minute rewrite, and she wasn't supposed to be that much of the episode and whatever else. But surely, at some point, you look at the final lock of the episode and think, oh shit, we focused on the wrong person here. You know what I mean?
I mean, with it being a Christmas episode, yes, a lot of it is fluff. I didn't expect the year in the hotel with Anita, and that really was a standout.
Yeah,
it's the best part of the episode by far. Yeah. I mean, it kind of falls apart when you look at it logically as to why the Doctor would hang around and not, you know, go visit past companions or do any number of other things, but. We've done this before, especially with Moffat.
Or visit David Tennant.
Yeah, that would be the perfect time.
Oh, God, Big Finish's ears have just pricked up again.
Fair enough, it might not make much logical sense, but the whole point was that it was coming after the Doctor had literally kind of chastised himself for not making friends and bonding with people, so it was him forcing himself to do that.
Because he does that anyway. Why does he
chastise himself? I don't know, man, I mean...
All he does is make friends. All he does is talk to everyone and make friends and see the best in people.
Yeah, you say that, but he's ditched a lot of people that, you know, could have been companions, as we talked about with, like, Shona and stuff earlier.
But that's because it's in the script. That's not the Doctor's fault.
I mean, fair enough. And, I mean, I've had this argument on Blumen Threads with somebody that was just like, I was like, I think it's criminal from the character of the Doctor's perspective that he was like, you need somebody, you need someone to travel with you, you need to make a bond. He bonded so much with Anita and then was just like, well, off you go to the Time Hotel. At least give us a reason for that. And they were like, well, that actress wasn't scheduled to be in the episode as much and she's not in series 2. I was like, yes, I get the real world reasons. I'm just saying.
I have to go now. My planet needs me.
I'm saying within the fictional narrative of the program, there's no good reason why the Doctor wouldn't be like, you want to come and travel with me?
You know, well, maybe just, you know, I've spent a year with this person. I really like them. They're not that expendable. I'll give them a nice cutty job and I'll go back to picking up some waif and stray that I can throw in the path of an oncoming Dalek.
To be fair, if we are going down, RTD is repeating himself, so he's lost a blonde companion whose name begins with R, who's named after the colour red, and then he's going to meet a woman who works in a hospital, and the Christmas special before that companion comes back. So technically, Anita will be in season 3, and she'll come back in the 70th anniversary, where it'll be a human Shuri Gatwa. And the old man's played by also an old man that's still alive, like David Bradley.
So
probably, yeah. I mean, that was at that point.
Speaking of kind of the lack of originality, that was my other big criticism with the episode, was that, like, even the whole Joy turning into a star thing, I was just like, yeah, I saw Voyage of the Damned. That's literally, you're just ripping yourself off at this point.
Yeah.
How very dare you. Kylie is a treasure and she fell into that reactor with grace and poise.
But they did the same thing there. It was like, you should be dead, but no, now you're going to turn into Starlight and travel the universe. And I was like, we've literally done this, and it was in another Christmas special.
It was arguably done a lot better.
At least Kylie had something to lose.
Yeah, exactly. And not just that, like I've said ad nauseum in that kind of Discord chat and stuff, I am so over the Doctor having to learn the lesson of, like, you've got to travel with somebody, mind, you're going to need someone. I'm like, he knows this by now, surely.
Yeah, but he's old, he forgets every 2 years. Every few series, he's got to do it again.
I do like the fact that this is like a series after being told that, oh, this new Doctor's just pure optimism now. He's going to get out there, and like, this is just, oh, I'm just so fed up.
Yeah, exactly. There's no consistency, and I know it's a different writer because it's Moffat and not Russell T. Davies, but like you said, the whole point of the stupid bi-generation was meant to be, well, now you're going to go and have your therapy, David Tennant, so I'm going to be full of optimism and happiness and not have any of your baggage. And it's literally been, like you said, less than a year, and he's like, this is why everybody hates you, you dick. You
know? But in fairness, that is pretty much the message of Christmas. You feel really joyful at Christmas, and then New Year hits, and it's the same old shitty you.
I suppose if you want to, yeah,
nothing gets better. We are whittling away our finite time until we fall off this mortal plane. Merry Christmas. See you next season.
Completely thrown my when I was going to say this.
Unless you randomly get turned into a star.
Yes.
Yeah, but no, oh, that's why I was going to say. I mean,
hello, Joy. Oh no, that's an aeroplane.
Yeah. Even even that little lack of originality, like I said, kind of even that part of the ending was just the runaway bride, where you have somebody that's like, I'm not going to travel with you, but you need somebody, Doctor, because otherwise, you know, you're going to go a bit too dark or whatever. And it's like,
we don't know how long he's been without Ruby.
I mean, I assume not long.
For her, but it's been years for him because he's maybe doing some weird Matt Smith the Snowman shit. I don't know.
Well,
I mean, between Space Babies and David Scott were like months, so who knows? Could be 500.
If you ask Big Finish, of course, he was traveling on his own for a good 75 years with the multiple other companions that'll introduce
him. £75 worth of box set.
Exactly, yeah.
I just love the fact that none of these companions actually die, and they're all just turned into ghosts, or they go traveling, or they turn into stars.
Have you ever seen it was on the Five Who Fans channel, Stephen Moffat's like greatest fear. Like Chris Johnson talks about how like he just hates killing people, and it like even goes back to the everybody lives rules just this once like thing.
Not
just this once.
I'm beating a dead horse with this kind of like lack of originality, but even that part, like the characters that died returning as like data ghosts, he did that literally just in Boom. You know, it's his trick that he's done since like Silence in the Library and whatever else, but it seemed like it was an arbitrary let's just play the hits because we need an episode kind of thing. And I have to say the threat, as it was just so pathetically nothing. It was such an afterthought, like, oh, Villain Guard are wanting to create a star so that they can weaponize it. What? Why? Eh? Just none of this makes any sense. And then at the end it was so inconsequential anyway that it was like, oh
yeah, like Twice Upon a Time. I don't know what to do when there's not a villain. It was basically that as well. It was his greatest hits.
Yeah, but anyway, I sound like I'm being really harsh.
10 out of 10. I loved it.
But yeah, that was my criticism. But so kind of sort of started talking about it, so I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the acting, mainly because I just wanted to shout out Steph DeWaley and say that if you watched the Doctor Who Unleashed, you will know that apparently this was her first acting gig, which I am blown away by. I cannot believe that, because she is so good. That's the woman who played Anita, if you're not sure, by the way. She is so incredible, and this to be her first work, she stole the episode for me completely. And I was like, this is just, I can't believe this is her first performance. She was incredible. I think it's some of the Moffat's best dialogue is between her and the Doctor. The whole Auld Lang Syne thing really kind of was emotional and hit home. And yeah, I just loved all those scenes, whether it was intended to be there or not, like I said, because, again, if you watch the behind the scenes, it was a question of something else was supposed to be in there, and this character had three lines, and they just kept building her up more and more. But, again, I wish that if they'd realised how much they'd built that character up and how popular she would be and how important she is to the story, you've got to do something with her. You can't then just have her completely overshadow the big guest star that you give nothing to. And, yeah, do something with the character, you know what I mean?
I did like the fact that, you know, he's collecting little police boxes.
Yeah.
And it's just like, they're selling things everywhere. Not sure why.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, I'd still be pretty pissed off if I was like, I spent a year with you and what you've basically done is give me a desk job and a tiny little tchotchke of a police box. The best you can do. But yeah, anyway. Having said that, like I said, I've already said it, but I think Joel Fry was great as Trev, and he would have made a good companion. I like the way he played that character, and it was kind of, you felt sympathy for him. I thought Jonathan Aris was good as the Silurian. Really weird, because I just know him from Sherlock, mainly.
Yeah, so. Anderson.
Yeah, yeah. So it was kind of a head trip to get around that at first.
But again, Trev, he did exactly the same thing that, you know, he did in Boom. It was exactly the same thing in Silence of the Library.
Oh, yeah. Completely.
It's Con of Angels.
It was also, that was also a plot point that really bugs me, because the episode wants you to kind of, in order to get to the very emotional, sappy ending, it wants you to basically think Joy has turned into a star now, and that's why she's not dead. But, like, technically speaking, so have, like, Melnack and Trev, who are also in there. And, like, yeah, are we forgetting about them, or is it not the same somehow? I don't get what we're trying to say here. But
maybe they'll go back to it at some point, and they'll all be having an argument, and the star's about to go Nova.
They'll go and look at a star, and it'll just be like three or four faces, Absorbaloff style, just like, hello.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Yeah.
Maybe that's series 6 of the Time Hotel.
Peter Kay plays the star. Tastes like chicken.
In terms of acting, I think Shuti Gatwa always great as the Doctor, and never more so, I think, in those hotel scenes. I've loved everything he's done, even in the episodes I didn't like. I think him as the Doctor has been fantastic. And don't give me this bullshit about, oh, he cries too much. Get out of here. You know what I mean? I cannot stand that criticism from people. And it's usually only ever directed at people of color as well. Because, you know, there's been plenty of other Doctors that have cried a lot. But, you know, whatever.
Shuti's really shaping up to be one of my favorite Doctors. Especially in this, I think he does really well, even when the material isn't always the best.
Yeah.
It's very, Matt Smithy, he's elevating shit. I just want him to be given the good stuff so that he can just thrive.
did you guys have any thoughts on the acting? Oh, I should say, by the way, Nicola Coughlan I thought was fine, but just made no impact for me.
I agree with what you're saying, Mike. Like, you know, they are, like, Anita is amazing. I didn't know it was, because I've still not watched Unleashed, like, I didn't know that was their first job. Like, that's amazing. It's just a shame that it's, like you say, just they focused on the wrong person, so that your main co-star gets next to nothing to do apart from nice emotional beat about the Tories and then die, quotation mark.
Yeah. I mean, they brought it up on Radio Free Scaro, the other podcast I listened to, something which hadn't occurred to me, but then I realised it is a big problem in the script, is that the Doctor knows Joy for exactly as long as we do. Like, his time with her is, like, in real time. And I was like, exactly. So that would have no impact on him whatsoever. This guy who lives for, like, thousands upon millions of years, he knew her for, like, 40 minutes or something stupid like that. And it's like, so why would he care?
Because he's the Doctor. He cares about people he only knows 40 minutes.
Yeah. Anyway, that was just my observation, shall we say, but
after so much build-up with regards to her appearance in the episode, she did have very little screen time. She
had nothing,
incredibly underwritten,
really badly so. I think she's easily the worst written kind of guest companion, like, you know, big second name on the call sheet or whatever you want to call it, because even in the likes of the Tennant specials, when he had guest stars in them, you know, Michelle Ryan or Lindsay Duncan or whatever, they all had something to do, and Nicola Coughlan, I just felt, you know, bad for her, because it's a nothing role.
I think she did good with the limited material that she had, but I think, you know, low-key crushes aside, I think she's a great actress. Mm. So, she can do that, but yeah, from what we were told and from what we gathered prior to the episode, she was incredibly underserved.
Yeah. Fair enough. So, yeah, any other thoughts on acting? Or shall I move us to the directing? Not that I've got much to say about that, but, you know.
To the director.
So, yeah, the episode is directed by Alex Pillai, who I think has directed for the show in the past. I have to say, I think the direction was actually really good. A lot of it looks, you know, spectacular, especially the, you know, the scenes of the Time Hotel and the way that it looks kind of sweeping and grandiose, I think is really good. The kind of, you know, the equivalent comparison when you're in the tiny hotel in Sandringham and the Doctor's in this one kind of room with all of the artwork and stuff kind of encroaching and pushing him in, I think there's a good contrast there as well. And it's more of a visual effects criticism. I didn't love the kind of, you know, the Doctor going full Indiana Jones on the Orient Express, swinging ropes around and everything. It was a cool moment, but for me, it was just like the VFX weren't really up to scratch on that one.
I've got to ask, how many insurance payouts have there been for people that go to watch the dinosaurs?
Why?
Because it was obviously not a safe setup.
Yeah.
Why did the dinosaurs look worse than they did in Deep Breath?
I can't say I noticed, to be honest. I wasn't really paying that much attention to the dinos at that point. Because it was more of a kind of like, why have you got a room here? I mean, the whole conceit is that, like, oh, there's always a spare room in every hotel and you can't get into it. So that's secretly the Time Hotel. But there wouldn't be a hotel in, like, you know, 65 million years ago. So you just built one for no reason. What the heck?
Poor workers having to build that.
Yeah, exactly. But again, it was it, like a lot of this episode, it was plot convenience because Moffat had to have it be like, oh, they want to send something back millions of years so that the star can have a chance to be microwaved or whatever to come to this weaponry form that it never does. And I don't know. It was just BS, really, wasn't it? So, yeah. Any thoughts on the directing?
It was fine.
Yeah, and I mean the character direction stuff with the, especially like I said, the Doctor and Anita was really good. So yeah, any thoughts then on the VFX production design other than my kind of little criticism? Yeah.
I still loathe the modern take on the Silurians.
Really?
Yeah, I just can't get the grips with it.
I don't mind. I mean, you can't really have them look, you know, so blatantly man in suit as they did back in the '70s.
No, you know? But I think you could. I think they could have updated it to a point where it looked better.
I think this one did
without just slapping some gills on a, you know, on a person's face.
Yeah, oh, fair enough. That's a very classic Who fan kind of criticism. I don't think anybody that doesn't know the classic era would care, to be honest. Yeah, fair enough.
There's an editing problem with, like, the Orient Express, like, trying to stop it. Like, he's there, and then suddenly he's just on top of the carriage.
Yeah.
Like, that's a bit like, oh.
Yeah, again, I think it's more that they didn't want to do much with the effects and stuff, so. Yeah.
But then why have the Big Fane Anchorage pull open a pyramid scheme?
You've got to do something, I guess.
Again, like Feast of Stephen, it just gave me vibes of this is just like a Christmas panto.
Yeah,
but it wasn't nearly as fun as, like, Husbands of River Song is like the ultimate panto Christmas special, and this was just not as fun. It was just like, yeah, a plod along the message of Christmas, Bethlehem, the end.
Yeah. I will be honest, I think, and this is my kind of editorializing, I don't know if there's any truth to it, but it felt to me a lot like, as you said, we already know that Russell T Davies went like, Moffat, help me write a Christmas special, I'm too busy. And it does feel a lot like Moffat was like, oh, I don't want to do that, but here's some perfunctory shit, that'll do. You know, it wasn't like, it felt like his heart really wasn't in it, if you know what I mean. It wasn't like a script he wanted to tell.
Like Twice Upon a Time.
See, yeah, but I like Twice Upon a Time. I think that has something to say, at least.
And, yeah, but know, he also wrote that just because Chibnall didn't want the Christmas special slot, so like, I can't lose it, yeah, so exactly. I'll just write this.
But that's my point, is that this Joy to the World, I think, felt a lot more arbitrary. We have to write a Christmas special and nobody else will do it than even Twice Upon a Time did. And it was kind of like, oh, what a shame. You know, there's good stuff in here. But overall, the kind of structure it all hangs on is very much like, look, you can't do anything with the main companions. We can't move much on. We're just going to have the Doctor be miserable and then come around and, you know, throw in a few Christmassy elements and whatever Moffat does, I guess. So, you know, whatever. But anyway. I am going to ask then if anybody has any thoughts on the music and the sound, because I can't say I noticed anything particularly in this episode.
There was nothing that stood out to me.
Nothing really stood out, which is sometimes good, but in this case, you know, unobtainable and unimaginative.
Yeah, there really should have been something more adventurous for, like I said, when the Doctor's doing his heroics or something at least, but not really anything was there, unfortunately.
Not even a rendition of Here He Comes in a Ruddy Big Tractor. Nothing to be seen.
Fair enough. Well, in that case, then I'm going to move us to our next section. I'm going to open the Subspace Network and ask our audience for their opinions. I kind of already have on social media, but, you know, don't ruin the illusion here.
I'm transferring the Subwave Network.
Yeah, I asked what people thought about Joy to the World, and I have a handful of decent responses. So if you bear with me, and excuse my sore throat. Let's see, where were we? From the Facebook group Shooty Gatwa is the Doctor, Rachel Redhead said, it's mostly meh. Last year's special was amazing, so I had high hopes for this year, but it felt like one long intro and then it ended. The best scenes were 15 going the slow way around while working at the hotel and the 30 seconds or so with the T-Rex. Everything else was just there. Maybe a rewatch will help. I've ordered the Blu-ray, but after enjoying Shooty's run, this feels like the first misfire. But I know others love it, so I'm glad the story has its fans who found something in the story that I missed.
Fucking, this feels like the first misfire. Jesus.
Yeah, I know, right? From the same group, Max Kame says, I liked the first half of it, everything until the Anita arc was over. After that, the problems of the story became more and more noticeable until it crumbled completely towards the end. But it's an amazing example to point to if you want to make people aware of Moffat's flaws as a writer. This special had all the problems that his season arcs used to have. It also has a lot of his strengths, of course, but my God, does it show well how bad Moffat is at handling an arc. It also does the typical things that Moffat always does and that annoy me by now. A lot of characters die, but none of them really die. In the end, it has a technobabble solution that sounds smarter than it actually is, and it gets super cheesy. Not my cup of tea, sadly, but it's also not terrible. I can even see how someone else might like it, but it wasn't for me. And again, from that same group, Gavin Hughes says, I liked everything but the Dragon Egg Moon ending. Meh, but I think Shooty really sparked. He was the real Christmas star. Unsurprising from a group called Shooty Gatwa is the Doctor, I suppose. So, yeah. From the group Northeast Retro Den, NERD, Andy Johnson said, sorry, I'm a big Doctor Who fan. I can buy anything, but unfortunately, in my eyes, this episode was a total letdown. This is my opinion, though, before I start getting hate mail and stuff. I just found it a waste with nothing to sort of fight off, meaning an enemy and major threat. I must have missed a few things, as at the end I still didn't understand, but I'm not in a hurry to watch it again, so in my eyes, thumbs down. From the same group, Jamie Glenwright says, I've always been a huge fan of Doctor Who, but I couldn't even endure the whole episode. The stories are getting weaker with every episode. I was very skeptical when Doctor Who was resurrected a few years back, but Christopher Eccleston was great, and so were the stories. Then obviously David Tennant was superb, as he is in everything, but I thought it went downhill from there, and has gotten worse ever since. I've tried so hard to love this new Doctor, but with episodes like this, I just can't. Ouch. Joe Beth Waite in this group said, I enjoyed it. It made me cry. I'm not going to argue that this era of the show doesn't have problems, but as a piece of television meant to be watched on Christmas Day when I'm already half cut, it worked perfectly for me. Fair enough. Most relatable one, I think, yet. And finally, Trevor Briscoe in this group says, I enjoyed it. Better than most Christmas specials, I thought. The highlight for me was seeing the Mr. Ben costume shop. Absolutely. Let's
see. People of a certain age.
Absolutely. Don't say that, but yeah. From Whovian Family Group, just the one here, Samuel McCain says, I loved it. I do wish the Doctor had questioned the temporal stability of the time hotel, but all the same, I'll be rewatching and I really enjoyed the episode. Very geeky nitpick, I think, on that one. And from my personal Facebook page, Mary Folds, hi Mary, says, it had some really heart-tugging moments, specifically the Doctor investing the time with Anita. Seeing him in one place doing normal life, I wish was more than a montage. I liked the payoff at the end with Joy, but man, did I love Trev. I was so upset about him. Solid 7.5 out of 10. And Will Templar, hi Will, says, perfectly solid episode until it becomes a painfully cringe one at the end. Disappointing, but not without laughs along the way. 5 out of 10. So, yikes. Not a great score from Will in that one. I'm sure he'll be on an episode or two of the Doctor Who thing if we go ahead with it, so we'll hear from him again. And yeah, so that was the audience's thoughts anyway when it comes to Joy to the World. Now it just remains for us to give our sort of conclusions, and we start as always with my episodes, or the ones that I'm kind of in charge of, by giving our favorite things. So I'm going to go around and ask for your favorite character, moment, and line in the episode. Let's see, George, I'll start with you. Who's your favorite character in the episode and why?
It might be a cop-out, but I'd say Anita, closely followed by the 15th Doctor, because their chemistry, like a lot of us have said, probably the best part of the episode was the year in the hotel, even though logistically it didn't make sense and was ultimately pointless, and he left behind a person that he should have taken with him.
Yeah, fair enough. What about you, Toby? Who was your favourite character and why?
Anita. I mean, do I need to explain? I think this is one issue where everyone almost agrees.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, I said the same thing. I've just written Anita, and I'm clearly not alone, so I didn't really feel the need to explain any more than that, because it's kind of obvious if you've seen the episode, she was the highlight, but yeah. So what about you, DK, then?
It's Anita.
Yep. 4 out of 4, I think, for Anita.
Again.
Great performance. So, yeah. Favourite moment or scene, George, in the episode?
The Tory outburst from Joy.
Okay.
It gave a thing of, oh, this character has, you know, other things going on, and gave us our window into her. And then we just didn't get enough from the script out of her to sort of be impactful when, oh, she bursts into a star. Okay.
Yeah.
Which was a shame.
Well, yeah. Anyway, let's see. Toby, what about you?
The same. This caught me so off guard when it happened.
Okay.
By watching, and incredible, incredible. Love it.
Okay. DK, what about you?
It's the same again. I'm agreeing with everybody else.
Well, I'm going to be different because I did have something different. And I said, I don't know if it was because of the whole kind of aforementioned half cut at Christmas thing, but I did like the ending. It got me in the feels. I was kind of, you know, weeping at the various things that happened at the end of the episode and thought it was at least came together very well. Even, you know, you may call it cheesy, but it's Christmas Day, so it worked for me.
Oh, mate, you're such a basic bitch.
Yeah, maybe. It's an old romantic at heart, you know. Anyway, so do you have a favourite line in this, George? I'm going to come to you first.
I don't know. I don't know if it's just the fact that, because I'd watched this not long before we started recording again, and it's like it was emptying itself out of my brain as it was happening. Like there's no standout dialogue, even though I was like, I quite enjoyed it on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
It's not like there's some clever like witticisms like Moffat stuff, but you know, ultimately it is, it's just plodding. So I can't really think of anything standout-ish, unfortunately. Maybe to steal from your picture, that is this armed?
Yes.
For the plunger.
I'm so pleased you said that because I forgot to mention it. But yeah, I have to say, myself and Toby both said on the Discord that we missed this joke, and I felt so stupid for missing it when the doctor's holding up a plunger and just goes, is this armed? Because obviously, Dalek weapon, you know? I was like, I felt so stupid for not picking up on that joke the first time around. So, yeah, I appreciate you saying that as your favourite line, because it wasn't mine, but it perhaps should have been. So, Toby, what about you? Favourite line, if you have one?
Honestly, it's been way too long since. I mean, I watched it when it aired and then not again, because I remembered it well enough, but not well enough that I can quote anything.
So nothing really made an impact?
I guess not. I guess that's a judgment in of itself.
That's quite damning within itself. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what about you, DK? Did you have anything?
Other than what Joy says with regards to, you know, it's been mentioned earlier, the outburst about a certain group living it up while everybody else... the only thing I've got Christmassy wise, or I do kind of like the little exchange where the doctor says, you know, you're being mansplained by a briefcase. And she says, I thought I was being mansplained by you. And he says, honey, the doctor's in the room. It's mansplain central.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. My favorite line was from Anita, no surprise. And it was, you look after yourself, okay? Never be alone at Christmas. You don't need to be, because I'll be right here, Anita, at the Sandringham. Think of me sometimes for old Lang Syne. Oh, see, I told you, it's an old romantic at heart. Anyway, so yeah, all that remains then is for us to give our conclusion and our score out of 5 stars. How very appropriate. So yeah, who would like to start and give your conclusion first? I'll ask. Nobody?
Everybody's just fighting for this one, aren't they?
Okay, George, I'm going to come to you first. What's your conclusion and your score out of 5?
Okay. It's fine. It's not the worst episode of Doctor Who I've ever seen. Like, I think it benefited more from being a Christmas special, because I think if this was part of the series, you'd be like trying to skip this on a rewatch. Whereas this is just like, oh, it's just a bit of fun. And like DK said, it's a bit of pantomime. It's, you know, it's just a bit of fun. It ultimately means nothing when you get down to the bare bones of where we sort of leave the Doctor and where we're going to probably pick him up again next season. This won't have any sort of effect, I can imagine. But it's just a shame that we had, you know, there was some great dialogue for the Doctor. There was a great actor, in like character of Joy, like such a character to like be had. Like she has that amazing moment, and then it ultimately, that's the most significant thing she's done. And you spent, like you say, more of that time with Anita, which is a shame. But, you know, it's another, you know, has-been, would-be companion that, you know, maybe we'll get a lot of big finish on. Maybe it'll redeem both of them in some capacity if they ever get Nicola and, forgot the actress who played Anita, if we get them back. But, yeah, it's just, it's very vanilla, but it's okay. I'd say like I can't say a 4 out of 5 star, can I? 3 exploding joys out of 5.
3 out of 5. I love that you're like, I can't do, you can do what you want, dude. It's your score. But yeah.
It's not quite a 4. It's slightly more, it's a high 3. It's, but I don't like doing halves because then you're just ranking out of 10 and then everything's pointless.
Fair enough. I won't tell you my score yet then. Okay,
Toby, I feel like a shit now.
Yeah, exactly. Toby, you want to go next?
Sure. This is difficult for me. I mean, what do you rate? Do you rate the plot? Do you rate how the emotional stuff made you cry? Where do you go with this? And you know, I want to give it a 10 or 5 out of 5 just for emotional stuff. And then you think about thinking, can you do that? Is that okay? I mean, I've been critical about the plot even here today. So can you really give it a 5 out of 5? Is that okay? And you know what I say? Live a little. I give it a 5 out of 5 because I like the emotional stuff and I don't care about the plot. And screw plot. It's a Christmas story.
Toby thought the episode was perfect and couldn't be improved.
Oh my. I remember that now. Christmas miracle in itself.
Every single time I'm in one of these situations now, I'm just going to remember Toby going, live a little.
Live a little. Give it a perfect score. Who's going to stop
it? What would Toby do?
I'll not be on next week. I've probably been killed bungee jumping.
without a bungee.
I mean, bungee jumping is living a lot.
You went a long way from like, do I want to give it a perfect score to let's jump off a bridge?
You go find a friend, explode, bang.
DK, you're up next, man. What's your conclusion and your score out of 5 exploding companions?
Yeah, plot wise, it's not exactly a Jason Bourne novel. It's Christmas. You can kind of forgive it. It's kind of flat. Stumbling from one scene to the next because it's all in good fun and you know it's a nice second course to Wallace and Gromit. Tutti is great. I honestly really want him to stay because I just think if he can make me care about some of the characters in this with his acting, then he's definitely doing good in my book. Again, I forget the name of the person that played Anita, but she was kind of a revelation. Yeah. That was good. And well, it's Nicola Coughlan, so I'm always going to be on that. That side of things, sorry. Yes, that went a bit carry on and it wasn't intended to. I like it. I think it's been one of the better Christmas specials for me personally in a while. So I'm going to give it 3.5.
Okay. That's a surprising score compared to what you were saying, but there we go.
Yeah. I'm enigmatic like that.
You are indeed your textbook enigmatic, as the 10th Doctor would say. Okay, I have mine written and ready to go, so bear with. Curse you, Stephen Moffat, stop making me cry. The ending of this episode really hit me emotionally on my first watch, so it's hard to deny its impact, though part of that may be due to the haze of viewing on Christmas Day, before Wallace and Gromit. It's also hard to ignore that it borrows heavily from the endings of at least 2 previous Christmas specials, and the idea of reinforcing how the Doctor needs a companion feels increasingly overdone. Personally, I'd prefer specials with a regular companion rather than one-offs who are destined to leave or die by the end. While the episode isn't bad, it feels like a letdown after the brilliance of Moffat's last script, Boom. The plot relies too much on contrivances, the guest star is severely underdeveloped, and the villain threat feels like an afterthought. Much of the story comes off as arbitrary. That said, there are still some classic Moffat strengths here. Clever dialogue, emotional moments, and standout highlights like Anita's subplot, even if it was a last-minute addition. These elements help the episode rise above its weaker writing and occasional cheesiness, though Christmas may also be the reason it gets a free pass in these areas. Overall, it's a fine, passable episode with enjoyable moments and memorable character beats, but in the grand scheme of things, it lacks weight and originality, revisiting themes we've seen before. Good, but not great. I also gave it 3.5 out of 5, actually. So, yeah.
You bastards.
Adding those scores together and dividing it by 4, to give us our average here means that we get a final score then for Joy to the World of 3.75 out of 5. So not bad. Not bad for a first one on the scoreboard on the Doctor Who podcast. So yeah, how do we feel? Do you think that's fair?
I think had it been like you all had gone for a 5 out of 5, I genuinely might have blown myself up into a star.
Live a little.
I can't.
Well, that wraps up this adventure through time and space anyway. A huge thank you to my fantastic guests, George and Toby, for joining me today. So before you head off in your own TARDISes, is there anything you'd like to plug or to let our lovely audience know where to find you online? Toby, I'll come to you first.
I mean, as always, on Blue Sky, with the name I forgot, which is, will be on in the links somewhere. Please don't ask me, I forget.
It'll be in the episode description anyway. So that's cool. And what about you, George?
Well, if you like to hear my opinions on Doctor Who and why, Nerd Bubble podcast on the Pasty Sheep YouTube channel, at Pasty Sheep on, you know, Facebook, not Twitter or X anymore, Blue Sky, Instagram, send me a brick through my window, however you wish to contact me, I will get back to you. We will have these lovely gentlemen on the season 2 reviews. I think, Mike, you've claimed the opener of season 2 for yourself and DK.
I have, yeah. I don't know if I actually asked DK to come on it or not, but he's gonna, you know, I was dragging on.
Well, you can answer now.
This is awesome. What story is this then?
It'll be the first episode of the new season when it goes out. So season 2 or series 15, whichever you want to call it.
Yeah, go on then.
Thank God for that.
It's always nice to be kept in the loop about these things.
Cool. So yeah, and you're obviously always available, as you said, on Nerd Bible and Pasty Sheep. So yeah, thanks DK for joining me as always and being my right hand man again on this very first Hit or Miss Doctor Who. Did you enjoy it?
Anytime. Yeah.
Cool. And anywhere people can find you online, or just the usual?
Just find me on these shows.
Yeah. Well. Of course, thank you to all of you brilliant listeners and viewers for coming along for this ride. If you enjoyed the episode, be sure to like, share and subscribe to keep the console TARDIS lights on. Sorry, to keep the TARDIS console lights on. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll find all our links conveniently in the image on screen. But if you're listening elsewhere, just hop into the link tree that's always going to be in the episode description for access to all of our online homes and social media platforms. You can reach me, the podcasts, and I guess you could leave a message for DK if you so really desired. Looking ahead, we've got some incredible journeys planned. Later this year, if this episode does well enough, we'll be delving into a full Doctor Who series all about the Doctor's ultimate nemesis, the Daleks. But first, on the very next Hit or Miss, we're taking a detour into Starfleet territory with a full review of the unfairly cancelled, frankly, Star Trek Lower Decks. It's going to be warp core breach level exciting. So until then, from all of us, keep travelling, hopefully. And as the Doctor would say, allons-y. Allons-y!
You've been listening to the Hit or Miss Doctor Who podcast, part of the Hit or Miss Who Trek channel. Hit or Miss Doctor Who is hosted by Mike Wilson and DK. Behind the scenes and additional material by DK, scripted, produced, and edited by Mike Wilson. Adapted from an original podcast created by Will Templer. Follow us on YouTube, your podcatcher of choice, and our social media. Links to all of these can be found by clicking on the link tree in the episode descriptions. This podcast is a Media Matters original production. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share this podcast through all of time and space. We'll be back for another thrilling TARDIS trip soon, but for now, Doctor, I let you go.